Well, we are, of all places, the Brown Derby.
The famous Brown Derby
on Vine Street between Sunset and Hollywood Boulevard. And we are chatting with Betty Lou Gerson and Lou Loria and Ellen Shaden and Chuck Shaden. And
yes.
We are enjoying the anticipation of a lovely lunch.
And, nice.
We have such nice company here. Betty Lou Gerson is a former Chicagoan.
I should say so.
Who has come out to this town to live and to work. And you've been out here for quite some time, haven't you, Betty
Yes,
Lou?
Since the late 40s. But I would like to say to everybody in Chicago, there's no place in the whole world like Chicago. There's no warmth like the Chicago actors had for each other. It was a very unique time in all of our lives, and I am sure you all have it, those of you who are in the business now.
It's the title in town, all right.
Well, it was the beginning. It was the cradle of the business, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And it has meant, I think, a tremendous amount to all of the performers who had their beginnings there, because there was tremendous warmth.
When did you did your career begin in Chicago?
My career began in... Well, I'll go back and mention dates. 1935 in Chicago, and I went on as co-star with Don Ameche at the end of 35 on First Night Of. Came out here in 36, and when I was asked to sign a non-cancelable contract for 2 years, I decided I wanted instead to get married, and I married Joe Ainley, who is now deceased, and stayed and learned my trade then as an NBC actress under contract. And we learned to do everything. Old ladies, baby cries, you name them, you know. And it proved to me far more advantageous than stardom at that early an age.
It would
the
be
stardom came later on.
Well, great experience to get into all of that sort of
thing. Of course.
Thing. Now, you were on a program called Arnold Grimm's Daughter.
That, again.
And you were the daughter.
Yes, I was.
Yes.
Very grim. And I was also starred on Guiding Light as Karen. Woman in White as Helen Ferguson. I was Mary Marlin, not the first. I was the third. Joan Blaine was the first. Annie Seymour was the second, and I was the third.
Eloise Kummer was in on that at one time.
Not Marlin.
After you.
Not Marlin. Marlin went to New York afterwards, and then there were only the three of us in Chicago. And
in Chicago. Oh, I see.
Who took it over. Eloise was Guiding Light.
Guiding Light,
after.
Yeah.
And she's a wonderful person and a dear friend.
You did a lot with the Chicago Theater of the Air, too, didn't you?
Yes, I did.
Worked for Colonel McCormick and...
well, for Bill Baker and Blair Walliser.
Mm-hmm.
And I think those were really the two that I worked for on the Chicago Theater of the Air.
You were in the speaking. They had a dual cast for that show, didn't they? Were the... a musical cast and a dramatic cast.
Yes.
And you were in the dramatic cast of it.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I think the musical cast was Mary and Claire.
Right, Mary and Claire. And trying to think of the name of the orchestra leader now, and I know...
Henry Weber.
Henry Weber,
He was
course.
Her husband, of
right.
course.
Right, yes, exactly.
Yes.
Yeah.
And a very fine musician.
What was your very first on-the-air experience in Chicago? Can you recall
Yes,
that?
I can. I think it was... I've forgotten the name of the station. It was the one that was that labor station. It's
CFL,
still there.
WCFL.
CFL. Uh-huh. And I was teaching, this is before 35, I believe, I was teaching at Boleslavsky's School of Music acting. I really don't know by what right. And he got a program on this, and I did, was it an Edna St. Vincent Millay poem? Did she write The Weavers? I mean, no, but the woman that's sitting and weaving, and she's weaving her life, and of course in the morning she's stone dead. Was that?
I'm not familiar with it, so I can't answer that.
Was that it, darling? Well, anyway, it doesn't matter.
I don't know the one you're
and right. I got on, and I didn't have brains enough to be frightened at all.
Uh-huh.
And then one of the studios called, they heard it, and then I went to, I decided, you know, to go and get some training, and I went to the Goodman, and after about 3 months there, I thought I knew all there was to know about acting. So I went down for an audition at NBC. I'd heard you got so much per word, which was a lot of nonsense, but, and I was selected to become an NBC, you know, a contracted actress, along with Betty Winkler and Ann Seymour and, you know, a lot of the the gals.
And then they just put you wherever they needed someone to do something, huh?
Yes, until, of course, I got the first NIDA, and then I, when I came back, then I went back into that status from the start of my first NIDA, and I feel that that was the most superb experience of my life, because it was like my husband, Mr. Laurier here, who has played Stark and all, you were general utility, you did everything. You did leads and all that, and of course I got into the leads in the soaps. I must have done 15 or 20 leads in the soaps at one time or other. Afterwards, Today's Children, and then of course Guiding Light when it came out here. But that marvelous range that you had to find of knowledge to me was just tremendous.
You would often do, I would imagine, a number of shows at a single time. I don't mean at the same minute, but in a given week, you would probably have been heard on quite a few shows at once.
I had a contract for 11 shows a week. They were two dailies, and they both had repeats for the West Coast because it was before they were taped or anything. And then I was co-starring first with Don, and then second with Jim Amici on Grand Hotel after Ann Simo went to New York. And at some weeks after that, gosh, I think I at one time had three soaps on, and that was 15, 10, 20, 25 shows a week, you know.
With
you'd meet yourself coming, you'd meet yourself coming and going. It was marvelous.
Different, of course, than television became, because first of all, the demands of television performing wouldn't have, you couldn't do that many shows. You didn't have to dress or use makeups or anything else for radio.
The thing we did, which I thought was so marvelous, the good radio actors were actors. They used their script as a reference. They were not like you see the people who do takeoffs on them, you know, where they're glued to a script or something.
Yeah.
You had rehearsed it twice. If you were an actor, you practically winged your script. You know this. And you used the script only kind of as a reference. So that the transition to television I found very, very easy because I had almost a photographic memory. My husband has a completely photographic memory. But I did a tremendous amount of television out here, and I did some movies.
Well, what in television were you involved with?
Well, no, I did some, perhaps 10 or 12, or maybe more, Perry Mason's. I did the Dick Van Dyke Show. And as a matter of fact, I coached Mary Tyler Moore when she was 12, until she was about 18, because the producer of my show, Guiding Light, out here was Bertie Hackett for Compton, and she was Mary's aunt. So Mary would come to the house every Saturday and take acting lessons, which were a gift from me to Bert, and Bert was giving her singing and dancing, and we worked on improvisations, and we just had a lot of fun, and I've known her since she was
You had done some things in the films, too, after you got out here.
Yes, I co-starred with Barry Nelson in a most forgettable movie by the name of The Man with My Face, Fred Gardner in Puerto Rico.
Oh.
He was down there.
Then he was doing his radio Duffy's Tavern out there.
Yes, and so he decided he'd do a picture, and then I did Undercover Girl at Universal with Alexis Smith and ran a number of totally unforgettable. The TV was good.
We took a little jump here, and we got you from radio in Chicago to television in Hollywood without saying making that move. When you came to Hollywood... you were very much involved in the radio days and radio things. What prompted the move from Chicago?
Well, I had gone to New York in the beginning of 46 because radio was going through a perfectly dreadful period there, and there was a great deal of radio either to the east or to the west. And I had gone to New York, and I had been offered three shows there, contracts. And which was just unheard of within literally about 3 days of my being there. And my then husband, Joe Ainley, flew to New York, and he said, I don't want the pace of, I don't like the pace of New York. I've lived here. And I said, well, I will not go back to a town that where all radio had left. And besides, I had a possibility of a tremendous play going in New York. He said, however, I will come to the coast.
The first one, the second one.
And that was, so we, he went back to Chicago and sold our farm and our, well, he didn't sell our apartment building then, but our farm. And we came out here at the end of 46. And then, of course, Erna Phillips, bless her dear heart, industry really misses her. There was a marvelous woman, as well as Jane Cruzenberry. They were two of the greatest writers, I think, in the whole world. Anyway, certainly in soaps. I came out. Erna brought all of her shows out, Erna and Carl Wester, and I was starred in Today's Children. And then I played all the rest of the, you know, Lux, Sam Spade, practically every week, all of them, the suspense, you name them, you know. And then, of course, the transition was from there, very simple, into TV.
Into TV. Well, it wasn't easy then because you had all the people out here and they were ready to move into television with them.
And we all knew each other, really, in the beginning.
Before we started our chat, your husband, Lou Loria, was mentioning that a couple of years ago you had a party out here for all the Chicago people.
Sorry,
Lou, what was that?
It wasn't a couple of years ago. It was February 27th of 1965.
Oh, a few more than a couple.
Joe Ainley and Betty Lou Gerson Ainley were guests of mine at that party. And that was, as I said, 1965, and there were 222 Chicago people at that party.
It who
was
lived
the,
here, or
oh,
who
yes,
lived here?
Those who were residing in California. We even had some come down from San Francisco to attend that party.
Tell the romantic part, darling.
The romantic part is that it brought Betty Lou Gerson back into my life, and little did she realize it. Joe and I had remained very good friends all through the years, but I had only seen Betty Lou three times. But Joe and I, Joe attended all meetings at the Maskers and at the Lambs and different parties we were given, stag parties, and I'd always have Joe at those parties, but I saw very little of Betty Lou until this night. And she didn't want to come to the party, and Joe said, Betty Lou, I can't do this to Lou. You've got to go to that party, and besides, Barbara Luddy wants us to pick her up, and who
Virginia
else?
Virginia Safford Lynn.
Virginia Safford Lynn. So they had to pick those people up, and and only under those circumstances would Betty Lou Gerson have come back into my life.
Because my husband died September
of 65, immediately following that party. And the amazing thing is that he never looked better in his life than that night. And I told him, on saying goodnight to him, Joe, I've never seen you looking healthier or better in all your life. And in September of that year, he passed away. That's how Betty Lou Gerson and I came back together.
Well, you are together today at the Brown Derby. And we're
forever. I say so.
Well, I think that you have had a most interesting career, Betty Lou. And
it's been terribly exciting. And now I have a marvelous one because Lou has, he's the granddaddy of the answering service business for actors out here, as well as for doctors and everything else. But basically, he started the answering service for actors, RATE, which stood for, at that time, radio and television. No, not television, radio artists.
Just radio artists, telephone exchange.
Right. And now he's put me to work there, and I adore it. I really do. He said, all right, kid, how about being president of the company, and I'll be chairman of the board?
Well, whenever someone's trying
she's
to...
She's the best sales girl we've ever had in the organization.
She's the most attractive one, too.
Best-looking
salesman I've ever seen.
How nice of you. Thank you for not saying salesperson. I was going to just say thank you for not saying Sorry, well, Gloria Steinem, I'm not a woman's liber.
it seems like men are salesmen and women are salespersons. You know, they just change
nonsense,
the word, you know.
It's such a lot of nonsense.
I hate to get the sex out of it. I can't understand why they want to be just persons.
I'm sure your wife feels the same. I'm so pleased and so proud of my husband, like you must be of Chuck, that I'm thrilled to death
to be Betty Lauria rather than Betty Lou Gerson. I think, really, when you are secure, you don't need... we're supposed not to get into that, I suppose, huh?
It doesn't matter.
I feel very strongly about it, because I think if you're secure, you... And I will grant you that I have not had that 9-to-5 job sort of thing, that perhaps there is discrimination. But as a woman, I am secure enough that I don't need to proclaim it. And anyone as attractive as you has to be, and I can see by your face, you're pretty doggone secure. You know, you don't have to say, hey, fella, hey, you know, let me in, I am in. Mm-hmm. And if someone thinks not, well, that's absolutely no importance or consequence. I think I love a dominating male, frankly. I think it's marvelous. And have I got one?
Lou, you're a dominating male, huh?
He's Italian. Dominated. Now, how can you possibly
up
be Italian?
Up to the point where she takes over. She always says, I'm the boss. But everything comes out the way she wants it.
Well, that's the whole game, darling.
These are the nice kinds of people that...
As our friend Erna Phillips used to say, I'm in agreeance with it.
Agreeance.
You were saying, I'm sorry, we interrupted.
I'm just
you.
Saying that it's nice to spend some time with some charming people like you folks, and we appreciate your spending a few moments to chat for our listeners, too.
Well, it's a thrill to meet you both, and anyone from Chicago. I talked to my sister last night, who had gone to see Ray Burr. He's playing in something there, and I said, you send a note back to him that, you know, because I worked with Ray so much and love him so dearly. And she did, and it was very, very charming.
Nice to talk with you both.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.